On Point is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. American high-tech giant Hewlett-Packard is famous for its Silicon Valley garage-to-glory story of entrepreneurship and innovation. But the latest story out of the Hewlett-Packard boardroom is less glory and more high corporate soap opera with what looks like a crime attached. Someone on the $86 billion giant's board of directors was leaking HP inside dope. Chairman Patricia Dunn ordered an investigation that ended up pirating private phone records of board members and journalists. The world's most powerful venture capitalist stormed off in fury. Now we've got charges of lying, spying, betrayal, and threats of criminal investigation. Up next on Point, high boardroom drama and American corporate governance as extreme sport. Joining me first today from San Francisco for the latest on Hewlett-Packard's boardroom drama is Peter Waldman, who's been covering the HP story for the Wall Street Journal. Peter, thanks for being with us.
Hi, Tom.
News today, I guess, Patricia Dunn, chairman of the board of Hewlett-Packard, stepping aside from that position.
Well, they're giving her several more months in the position, presumably to make her apologies to journalists and directors of the company whose phone records were improperly obtained, as well as to appear before Congress and generally take the flak for this. So she is stepping aside. Mark Hurd, the CEO, who's very well liked, will be taking over, but again, not until Dunn takes a few more spankings.
Peter, the business world has been absolutely fixated on this story, mesmerized by it. Many of our listeners may not have followed it all. Remind us of what Hewlett-Packard is, just how big it is, the kind of history that it comes from, and then begin to take us to the origins of this incredible fracas.
Well, Hewlett-Packard is one of the very first technology companies in the Silicon Valley. It's located in Palo Alto, founded by a couple of legends, Hewlett and Packard. David Packard went on to become the Deputy Secretary of State many years later in a Republican administration. It has essentially pioneered the area of instruments, the whole field of scopes and oscillators and all kinds of things used in that realm of science and technology. It has sold that instrument division and now focuses pretty much exclusively on computers and printers. It basically owns the market for printers with some Japanese competitors, but everybody knows HP laser printers. It acquired Compaq Computer a few years ago and is leading number one or two in the personal computer market. So it's very, very large. In fact, I believe it's the largest technology company in the world at this point.
And we should be clear, its record on the business performance side has been pretty terrific lately.
Well, in the past 18 months, the stock has nearly doubled, and that's largely attributable to the past year or so of management by Mark Hurd, who became the CEO after the board threw out Carly Fiorina, his predecessor.
She went after Compaq. There was a lot of bitterness over that. So if the company's doing so well, what was the origin of all this drama?
Well, the drama does date back to the point when they did go after Compaq. Carly Fiorina engineered that deal. It was very controversial among some old-time Hewlett-Packard people, including Walter Hewlett, an heir of the founder. And he challenged Carly and lost. Carly got to buy Compaq and consolidate the operations. Ever since that time, there's been tremendous acrimony on a board that's been quite in flux. People coming and going, no real control, very little leadership at the top there, and ultimately that led to the rise of Patricia Dunn to the chairmanship. She became very upset, as well as some other directors, by a series of boardroom leaks, which is common in corporate America, yet in this company they were particularly venal at various points because of all the internal struggles. And as a result, she mounted an investigation who the leaker was in the boardroom. That led to where we are today.
Now, that investigation, which she says she ordered, but she's just essentially saying, I didn't know how they would do it, led to a private investigator, as I understand it, going out and illicitly acquiring the private phone records of board members, others, and journalists from any number of publications, I think including your own.
Yeah, we had two journalists whose phone records were illicitly acquired. The California Attorney General, now the federal U.S. Attorney in San Francisco, as well as the Federal Communications Commission and a committee of Congress, are all investigating. There could well have been crimes committed because Hewlett-Packard has acknowledged that a form of investigative tactic called pretexting was used. Pretexting basically means for investigator to disguise oneself as somebody else, in this case as directors of Hewlett-Packard and as journalists who were covering the company, and to use that disguise to obtain phone records from the phone companies.
So they call up, they say, I'd like to have my phone records for the last whatever period. They convince the phone company that they are who they say they are, and the phone companies hand them over?
It's identity theft, clear and simple.
And that apparently is exactly what happened here. Is it clearly illegal?
Yes. The Federal Telecommunications Act of 1996 says it is illegal to obtain phone records through false pretenses. So under federal law, it's illegal. Various states have different kinds of laws that address pretexting. Again, there is a federal law against the use of pretexting to obtain financial records. And as I said, it's different in different states. The California Attorney General has said unequivocally it is illegal under California law.
We'll learn more about pretexting, this illicit acquiring of phone records, at the least later in this hour. But what about the Hewlett-Packard crew now? Who, if anyone, is vulnerable to criminal prosecution?
I'm not sure anybody within the company is vulnerable to that. Their excuse or explanation at this point is that they did not know pretexting was used by an outside party that they retained. So it's difficult to know at this point to what degree they will be held liable. If anyone is within the company, it will almost certainly be within the general counsel's office. There is a longtime lawyer there who is the general counsel named Ann Baskins. And it's under her watch and her people who retained the outside firms that did the pretexting.
So here we are, a giant company in a whole lot of hot water, even as its stock has doubled and its sales are great because of egos and skullduggery on the board. Scandal at Hewlett-Packard. Peter Waldman, thanks very much for joining us.
Nice to be here.
Peter Waldman, reporter with the Wall Street Journal, joining us there from San Francisco. I want to turn now to New Haven, Connecticut, and Jeffrey Sonnenfeld. He's president of the Chief Executive Leadership Institute at Yale University's School of Management, where he's a professor. Jeffrey Sonnenfeld, thanks for being with us.
Thanks, Tom. Good to be with you.
This has been all over the business pages for days and weeks now. Now Patricia Dunn is out. Clearly the business world absolutely mesmerized. For general listeners, hearing about scandal and skullduggery and uproar on a big corporate board of directors, why is it important, Jeffrey?
Well, it is terribly important, and you're right that it has gotten a tremendous amount of headline coverage, and it feels like it's been weeks and months, as you put it. It's actually been amazingly, Tom. It's not quite a full 6 days yet.
Yeah.
But I know it has been everywhere. It's sort of like the feeding frenzy that we saw over the Martha Stewart coverage, leaving WorldCom, the greatest bankruptcy in American history, somewhat in the shadows.
No ankle bracelets here yet, but a lot of drama. Does it matter to ordinary Americans?
Yeah, it matters on a couple fronts. We want to know that our institutions are honest. And a critical part of what Peter had mentioned is that of these security breaches, it isn't just a little club that's caught up with trying to police itself from gossip. Is that these are very, very sensitive strategic secrets that were leaking out to competitors or could have undermined the security markets. There's something called Regulation FD that has to do with the fair and full disclosure of financial information. Mm. If a board member is selectively telling their buddies or different circles in Silicon Valley certain information about upcoming deals, that could have a devastating effect on the market and, of course, undermine the integrity of the market, and people could buy and sell on unfair access to information.
So the market can get thrown out of whack, but we've also got real privacy issues here from the other side
huge.
Of this coin.
Huge. There's a history of this, too, that goes back to Procter & Gamble had a wonderful CEO who had a misguided moment, a dumb attack, if you will, a guy named Ed Arts, who was a tough CEO, a very good guy, but somehow had authorized that an investigation be done to get 803,000 records of individuals' home and business numbers to find out who in the Wall Street Journal They found that it was a woman named Alicia Swayze, but who was talking to this Wall Street Journal reporter in the Cincinnati area? And Cincinnati Bell just forked this stuff over. And I know later in the hour we'll be getting to talk about this issue more in terms of the privacy protection. But it's extraordinary that based on just four last digits of this Social Security number, this kind of information is available to anybody with no, you know, if I were to call for my utility bill here in New Haven, I would get a positive callback asking for a verification that I made the inquiry, I made the request. How could AT&T, then called SBC, fork this stuff over with so little concern?
And then we've got the clash of titans here. We've heard a little bit about Patricia Dunn. We'll learn more about her. Very potent force as chairman who's stepping aside as of January. But also Thomas Perkins at Kleiner Perkins, one of the most fabled venture capital firms in the world there in California. Him described as the most powerful venture capitalist in the world and gone out months ago, bombs throwing, guns blazing. I mean, big characters here clashing now very publicly.
I believe it's tomorrow, in fact, that Patricia Dunn is to be inducted into a Legends of Silicon Valley club that Tom Perkins is a member of, some important organization there.
I don't think they'll sit next to one another from all reports.
I wonder what the conversation would be, but it would. They are two very serious players in all of this, and they're very, very prominent and inspirational people.
Now, from San Francisco, Therese Poletti. She's covered Hewlett-Packard for the San Jose Mercury News for more than 5 years. Therese, thanks for being with us.
Hi, thanks for having me.
I wish you'd introduce us a little bit more to the big characters who are central to this drama. Tom Perkins, first of all. Jeffrey Sonnenfeld was saying, I mean, this is one of the biggest of the big in the world of venture capital, and Silicon Valley is the heartland for that. Just how big, how important, how influential, Tom Perkins?
Well, Tom was a co-founder of Kleiner Perkins Caulfield Byers, one of the original venture capital firms in Silicon Valley, and they were behind companies like Google, Genentech, Netscape, Amazon. You know, they provide the initial funding for startup companies, and, you know, obviously he's had some great successes.
Big successes, but not a success in his interaction with Patricia Dunn, Therese, and this is interesting. It gets into the kind of personality, worldview issues that can come out in corporate boardrooms. Tom Perkins, a kind of big stroke guy. Patricia Dunn, very focused on the details. There's a story recounted, I saw it in Newsweek this week, of them getting together early on in his gigantic living room, looking over the Golden Gate, her very focused on corporate issues. And Tom Perkins, I don't know, centib millionaire, very rich guy, flying a remote-controlled helicopter back and forth around her head, kind of having fun while she was locked onto the issues of corporate management here. A personality clash, Therese, perhaps?
Yes, it definitely seems so. Where they're portraying, you know, Patty Dunn as being very serious and Tom trying to, you know, joke around, but then they go onto that scene where you know, he's trying to talk about broader issues, you know, about going on at Hewlett-Packard, and she's kind of focused on nitty-gritty corporate governance minutia, which I thought was kind of interesting. So that seems to be, you know, maybe the beginning of some of the clashes between them.
And if you want to look at a powerful will, Therese, look at Patricia Dunn. I mean, this is a woman who started out as kind of a freelance reporter, ended up a big figure at Barclays in investment. And just in these last few years, as I read it here, marched through something like four or five different cancers, as she was holding these big positions.
Yes, it is amazing. Yeah, I really agree. And it kind of shows, you know, her position today where she's still remains on the HP board. You know, she's going to resign from chairman starting in January, but she's still on the board. I think it shows that the board really is behind her and really still respects her and her judgment, even through this whole debacle.
I mean, it's incredible, Jeffrey Sonnenfeld. You talk about people willing to walk through fire. Here, Patricia Dunn, breast cancer in 2000, melanoma 2 years later, ovarian cancer in 2004. Last month, a tumor in her liver. I mean, this is a woman with a lot of grit to keep on going with all these health issues. What about the issue of fundamentally clashing kind of perspectives? Tom Perkins, big venture capitalist, you know, sort of big stroke guy. Patricia Dunn, nuts and bolts, dot the I's and cross the T's. Is that a common dynamic on boards?
Well, it It's slightly different from the way Teresa characterized things, because she was really commenting on some third-party material you threw her way, and I love her work, so I think she usually gets it just right. But I wouldn't see it as big picture versus detail-oriented. I'd see it as part of the culture of e-governance of the e-commerce world that had been a long celebration of cronyism. Tom Perkins was part of a culture where people were serving only 6-7 years ago on upwards of 15 boards, some more. And then the world of that VC community and many of those early-stage technology companies and the governance practices then don't make sense in this era. And governance is an important thing. And Patty, as opposed to Tom, Patty has been an advocate of good governance and should be celebrated for that, that the idea of plugging security leaks was serious, especially when the boards asked her to do it, and it was her duty then to fulfill that, although they couldn't, of course, oversee it themselves since she herself was pretext, as I guess the CEO and everybody else on the board was. So they couldn't oversee it. It's like asking if we're going to tell you we're going to look in your third drawer, Tom, so you're going to clear out your third drawer. They couldn't know the method, but somebody should have had oversight, but not them.
But when you look,
you
look at the venture capital record of Kleiner Perkins, and it's pretty astounding. Google and so many other big, big successes, billions of dollars made for investors there. And you don't see genius. You see ultimately cronyism?
Well, there's genius there, but there's also a lot of cronyism. The cronyism being the idea of being able to serve on such a large number of boards, as had been that culture. In this particular case, it was the issue, as Tom Perkins' own materials that he has widely circulated to the media, that he was angry over the outing of his friend, who was the source, Jay Keyworth, and that's what led him to step off the board. Only subsequent to that did he have outrage over this outrageous technique of investigation as it became more clear, but he stepped off because he wanted a protective cover of a crony, and that's what cronyism is. Transparency is what good governance is, and that's what that's why the board had asked Jay Keyworth to resign.
Therese Politti, give us the California view on all this. What's your sense of how the players in this drama are being judged there in Silicon Valley? How's Patricia Dunn's reputation holding up? What about Tom Perkins?
I think within Silicon Valley, everyone is pretty captivated by this whole story. I think a lot of people have been calling on Patty Dunn that she should resign. There's definitely been a huge debate, and you know, part of it I think is a result of what Jeffrey is talking about, is this sort of not necessarily cronyism, but all these interconnections. Everyone is interconnected. People are on other people's boards, and so there's a lot of people in different camps. I think there's a lot of debate going on.
You say, you quote accounts of this board meeting over the summer where it came out that the leaker had been spotted, and maybe spotted in this way. Tom Perkins, maybe the world's most powerful venture capitalist, slamming his briefcase shut in the boardroom. Patty, you betrayed me. I quit. I'm leaving. And storming out, flying off in his Porsche, leaping onto his super yacht days later in Istanbul. Is there the sense that the sort of titans of venture capital can get too big for their britches here, Therese?
Yeah, I think there is that sentiment among the rank and file employees, and who are also kind of outraged by what they've observed, but. I definitely think that there's a sense of, there's a lot of people with a lot of money playing here.
A lot of money, to say the least, hundreds of millions in his case, and a huge record of big investments. I want to begin to turn to our listeners. Amy's calling from Silver Spring, Maryland. Hi, Amy. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. It's Amy Alexander. How are you?
Hi. Great. Great to hear from you, Amy. What do you think of all this?
I'm thinking that I'm waiting for you guys to make the connection between this spying. I mean, they're calling it pretexting, but, we're in a time when our government spies on people all the time. So perhaps the board felt, if
it's good enough for the Attorney General of the United States, it's good enough for us?
Exactly. And, I mean, it's the kind of a piece. I think the whole mindset of entitlement, and we know what's best for you, and we will use whatever means we feel are appropriate, is kind of perhaps becoming more a part of our shared experience. I'm interested to hear your guests' take on that.
Let us pick it up and stick with us for a second, Amy. Jeffrey Sonnenfeld, How about to you? You've been defending Patricia Dunn for plugging the leak, but the way she did it, or the way it was done, I should say, because it got contracted out, do you see it as atmospherically at least related to the sort of more general, more aggressive surveillance going on in our country under federal direction?
Well, I think the caller is right to seize the link between a national culture that accepts this kind of invasion of privacy and the dangers of what's possible electronically. As you pointed out in the opening, what was done here was not even done through complicated technology, but just simple, straightforward lying. It's horrible. But it had nothing to do with the board. The board did this on their own when
the chairman ordered the investigation. The board ordered the investigation.
The board ordered it, and the chairman merely executed. The full board ordered it. There's nothing the board knows today, last week, last month, or 3 months ago about this situation and the chairman that they didn't know back then, other than the fact it's now public.
So you're saying that they're not responsible, but, you know, the Newsweek piece goes back to Henry II, you know, the famous incident where he wants to get rid of the Archbishop of Canterbury and mutters. He just mutters in front of his knights, "Will no one rid me of this troublesome priest?" Not my problem what happens after that. I mean, when you order this, isn't it the board's responsibility to follow up?
You could just keep pulling the thread of culpability forever on these things. When JetBlue found out that in their organization millions of files on travelers were forked over to a third party unconscionably in violation of the company's privacy policy, they went out, they held individuals accountable. They didn't fire the CEO, David Neeleman, for it. They had done everything they thought they could do. They apologized. They thought they could do better. We've had many examples of this in the last year of companies that have had egregious violations of security, but they didn't know that it was being done. They didn't authorize this. And the victims in this particular case themselves, with the exception of the press, were the board themselves. They're the ones who asked for an investigation to be done, but they didn't authorize nor know of these techniques. You have somebody there who, though, encouraged this kind of investigation by not acknowledging himself that he was the source of the leak. You draw a parallel. We have a parallel to Richard Armitage, a Deputy Secretary of State.
In the Valerie Plame case.
The Valerie Plame case, who allowed that whole tortured investigation take place without telling, apparently, even the White House that he was the bad guy who leaked it. How Jay Keyworth could sit there and let this whole investigation unfold and say nothing is pretty awful. But the board, I mean, just to randomly take people and throw them under the bus, that's sort of scapegoating. The issue never goes away. If the laws are broken here, if there's unethical conduct, this has to be explored. But just randomly picking somebody, you know, if there were careless memos with Gates and Ballmer in the antitrust prosecution of Microsoft, they didn't go around on a witch hunt firing people who wrote bad memos. A bigger systemic issue had to be explored. And when you've had problems, no company is selling. When you do the scapegoating, if that's what Carly Fiorina and this company did years ago, she was disappointed with European performance, off with their heads. Off with their heads is not the right way to go. This sort of scapegoating is not the way to go, is that somehow they have to figure out how to solve the problem. But making a victim out of the chair or other single individuals is foolish. They need to rally together and act like a board.
Well, I hear that argument, and yet we've got the FCC, the SEC, now Congress and Attorney General standing up here. Therese Pelletti, how's it going down in Silicon Valley? You hear Jeffrey Sonnenfeld's interpretation, but how does Silicon Valley look at it? Do they see the board as having said, we want to know what's going on here, sort of the unsaid auxiliary being by whatever means necessary, even though they didn't directly authorize it?
I think there's two camps there as well. I think, you know, there's the camp that's outraged that reporters' records, phone records were accessed. You know, the whole privacy. There's a lot of privacy advocates that are, you know, really outraged. And then there, you know, are people. And this is also a point that's not really been paid too much attention to. Mm-hmm. Is the fact that there was a leaker on the board and that, you know, that had to really be stopped in terms of, you know, corporate confidential information.
This is, it turns out, George Keyworth. He's been on the board since 1986, a long time, a pal of Tom Perkins.
So a lot of people say, well, you know, they had to find out who was leaking information. You know, they could have jeopardized HP's, you know, business agreements. I think one of the stories talked about a strategic you know, positioning that HP had with its, you know, with Intel and AMD, how they were kind of positioning the two companies against each other.
And what's the interpretation of what George Kiewert did? I mean, this is a guy who's been around. He was science advisor to President Reagan. He served in plenty of high-ranking positions. What's the interpretation of why he was leaking, if he was leaking?
I think some people think, you know, when people leak, it's for a reason. They want to stir things up. And, you know, I don't necessarily know that it was him in the early stories in 2005. There were leaks about Carly and the board confronting her about their concerns with her. You know, that definitely seemed to have been done to stir things up.
Sort of agitate to maybe get her off the board? Is this a case where it's just too sexy not to talk about it?
There's usually, when someone is leaking, they usually have some, you know, reason for doing so. They want to, you know, have something in the press to, you know, to activate something.
Jeffrey Sonnenfeld, what about that kind of bank shot appeal to minds outside the board, in this case through leaking? Is that fair game, or that's off limits for board members?
I think Teresa's exactly right on this, is that it would be irresponsible of the board and the chair to have ignored what was brought to their attention, which was highly confidential information getting out there both in blogs and the technology media and elsewhere about pending deals. That would be irresponsible, if not illegal, for them to not follow up and plug the selective disclosure of that information. And then once they uncovered the source, it would have been irresponsible, if not illegal, for them to cover it up and not hold the individual accountable. Those two steps were the right thing. The wrong thing was that it didn't go to a third-party law firm to do the investigation. If you want to ask me who is accountable, if it's not the board, it's the advisor to the board. I don't know what legal advice they were getting. I don't know Larry Sensini of their outside counsel.
As they started to outsource this all the way to ultimately this pretexting, this phone record kind of piracy.
Yes. I mean, last week we saw the Merck board, based on truly independent outside counsel review, exonerate their management, as actually I think was appropriate. But it was done the right way, as management was overseen by the board through a third-party independent investigation. In this case, you had management investigating the board, and no third party at a senior level was brought in. Certainly no law firm with the hopefully integrity you would want of a law firm. The Wilson Sonsini firm was brought in apparently late in the process, and the advice that they were getting along the way is some would question why more wasn't disclosed back in May about the apparently acrimonious exit from Mr. Perkins of this board, that should have been disclosed in a what's called an 8K disclosure form to the SEC.
The public deserves to know why, but off goes Mr. Perkins to maybe the biggest private yacht in the world, and a big drama unfolds. Right now, Dave is calling from Westminster, Massachusetts. Dave, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. Oh. And let me see if I can say this as concisely as I finally did to your earlier. But I'm a little concerned about the concept of accountability at the top of almost all of our institutions at the moment.
Hmm.
Your earlier caller mentioned comparison to the national situation. And in this case, I have to wonder, didn't the chairman of the board think to inquire of the people she hired as to the source of their information, particularly if only to try and determine the validity of the information? I mean, apparently they reported to her that this individual was the leaker on the board. How were they supposed to have found out?
Dave, it's a great question, and I want to bring in another guest to go to that, if I may. Joining us from Washington is Mark Rotenberg. He's executive director of the Electronic Privacy Information Center. It's a not-for-profit public interest research center. Mark Rotenberg, thanks very much for being with us.
Hello, Tom.
So here's the question from our listener. He says he wants accountability in leaders of institutions right across the board. When the chairman of the board of a big corporation like Hewlett-Packard says, I want to find out what's going on with this leak, can he, or in this case she, then later say, but I never imagined that illicit means would be used to figure that out?
Well, that's a question that I think is going to end up in a courtroom, because there will be charges brought, and if there are criminal charges, the question of intent becomes critical in a case. But I think the larger issue here is, of course, the concern about using these kinds of techniques, obtaining personal calling records of board members and of reporters, which I think most people just think are absolutely objectionable.
But it sounds so simple. Can they really just call up the phone company and say, this is George Keyworth, and I'd like my personal records, and, you know, I don't know, give some ID information, and over they come? Is it that simple?
Yeah, it's clearly much easier than it should be. Now, I need to say also that my organization, EPIC, has been pressing this issue of pretexting here in Washington for almost a year. We did this long before the recent fiasco at Hewlett-Packard. We went online and we found a year ago that there were 40 companies that were making available for sale, you know, other people's monthly billing statements. And you need to understand that those are the, you know, for cell phone customers, those are the detailed records of everyone you've called or who has called you over the past month. We said to the Federal Communications Commission there need to be much tougher security standards than there are today. It shouldn't be so easy for someone to call up a provider and get someone else's records. We told the Federal Trade Commission, you've got to crack down on this industry. It really shouldn't exist. We couldn't think of a reason that someone should be in the business of selling someone else's phone records. And we've testified in Congress. We think there needs to be very clear federal legislation to prohibit pretexting. It's, you know, obviously this issue is getting attention because of what's happening at Hewlett-Packard, but anyone's phone records could be obtained by this technique.
I want to look at the legal aspect of this. Our caller wants to know about accountability. Mark Rotenberg, stand by. Right now joining us from Sacramento, California, is Bill Lockyer, California's Attorney General. His office is in... Oh, it looks like we just lost the line to Sacramento there. I hope we'll have Bill Lockyer back in a second. Therese Puletti, I know we have to let you go in a moment. What, you know, our caller says, what about accountability here? Can Patricia Dunn or the board, as Jeffrey Sonnenfeld points out, say we want this and then not be responsible for how it's got?
That's what, you know, they're all claiming that they didn't know how the records were obtained. But my question is, you know, for them, how did the, you know, these third-party people get partial social security numbers of board members, which, you know, they had to get them from somewhere unless they have really good investigative techniques.
Now, board members are typically compensated. If they're compensated, that, of course, means the corporation has their social security number. Are you suggesting
it had to come
from Hewlett-Packard?
Well, I don't know. That's one thing that we've been, you know, kind of wondering about is how did the investigators get partial social security numbers. And but then they also must have got them for reporters, too, because they posed as the reporters to get reporters' records. So the whole thing is just frightening.
Let me turn to Bill Lockyer, California's Attorney General. We've got him back from Sacramento. Attorney General Lockyer, thank you very much for joining us.
Good morning.
It's good to have you. We've got callers asking about accountability here. How are you looking at responsibility for the digging into phone records here, the so-called pretexting? Where are you looking, Attorney General Lockyer?
Well, we have to look both in the corporation for what they specifically did and the expectations they had with respect to the outside contractors that were several. So we're looking both up the corporate ladder and outside to their outsourced firms that worked on this.
Now, are you determined to launch a criminal investigation? Have you already?
Oh, yes. We've been doing that quite some time.
And have you announced who your targets are? Is that how you work in California or not?
No, we have not.
What would the charges be? I mean, what's the offense here?
Well, there are two or three specific California statutes that essentially a form of identity theft, pretending to be some other person specifically, and then getting access to computer records and utility records. Each of those is a felony in California.
Do you have the sense that this is a widespread activity? Mark Rotenberg in Washington saying, you know, you can just go online and ask this, I don't know, $49.95 or whatever it is, and off you go. Is this widespread, or is this very unusual, at least unusual to find it in such high places?
Well, we've worked a number of other pretexting cases, but it's always been the data miner, the firm that did this sort of illegal search. This is unique, I guess, in that it involves the corporate boardroom.
Therese Puletti, I know we have to let you go. Have you felt a chill in the air since Attorney General Bill Lockyer with us from Sacramento turned his sights on this issue with Hewlett-Packard? Is Silicon Valley thinking, oh my gosh, you know, we've got to clean up our act? Or are they saying, hey, HP figured it out with, you know, digging in phone records. Maybe we should do the same.
Well, yeah, that's, I think, what a lot of reporters are starting to be nervous about is, you know, are other companies going to try and do something like this? You know, they have information getting out that they don't like. I think it's hard to say. I don't know if any company would try it now, but I've noticed just talking to different sources recently, a couple of people have said, can you call this number or, you know, just email me? Or, I mean, I guess nothing is sacred, but I'm wondering if we're going to return to the days of Woodward and Bernstein where you know, stick a flower pot in the window in order to meet a source.
And meet at midnight in the parking
garage.
Exactly. Wow. Therese Puletti at the San Jose Mercury News, it's been great to have you. Thanks for joining us.
Okay, thanks very much.
Mark Rotenberg, you hear Attorney General Lockyer moving on this issue. Does it sound like the kind of attention that your organization feels it needs?
Yes, I'm very pleased that the Attorney General is pursuing the case. Of course, in California, there are some laws that will make it easier to go forward. One of the reasons that we've been pressing this issue in Washington is because there is no federal law that makes clear that pretexting is a crime, and as a result, we think it's still too easy for people to acquire someone else's telephone numbers, to make them available to data brokers, to sell them online. And we think Congress, now aware of the issue, needs to take some action.
And Jeffrey Sonnenfeld at Yale, you've got the Attorney General of California on the line with you now. You've defended the HP board for going after these leaks. He's coming at it from another angle, a privacy angle, and saying no thanks to this. What are your thoughts or your questions to Bill Lockyer?
I'm thrilled that Mr. Lockyer is on this case, as I think the whole nation is going to benefit from whatever he comes up with. I think that something that all of us want to know as soon as Mr. Lockyer can reveal it is who these private investigative firms were. Apparently what we hear is some series of subcontractors and things, but for whatever contractual reasons the company can't reveal it. I sure hope, Mr. Lockyer, you can reveal it and reveal that soon, so this should be in the public hands so we can see who is culpable. What we hear is that there were legal assurances given, and you'd want to know the role of this outside law firm, Wilson Sonsini, if the board was given legal assurances, both from the subcontractor and what they did investigate, to Dave's question, is after they learned how this was information was gotten, the board did in fact launch their own investigation without there being outside authorities pressuring them to do it. I don't know what the assurances were they got back from that investigation. But the advice matters that the board got. And also it's important, as we've heard the story, that the board and the chair didn't hire the investigators. I think Dave has that part of it wrong in his question, but it went to the internal security group, I think whatever they call the standards and practices group, and that management group hired the outside firm. So that the board was not involved.
Let us look at that. Bill Lockyer, you're Attorney General in California. Two issues here. One, is there a firewall created for the board if their legal representation, their lawyers, told them everything was on the up and up? And two, can you outsource something like this, you know, so far down the line, so many steps removed that you're no longer culpable?
Well, those are both good questions. And, of course, they're very fact-dependent. And so we would have to get into the details of what were the specific instructions and who should have known what kind of instructions were given. More likely on the liability on the agent or subcontractor end can't be cut off so easily.
And on the how many steps removed before culpability is also removed?
Well,
is there such a thing?
Yeah, there's no rule of thumb about that. It you know, mostly it just depends on whether or not you can prove it.
Patricia Dunn is still chairman at HP. Is that a problem for you as Attorney General?
No. Our duty is to enforce the law. Theirs is to run the company. It's a good company, and that's what they have to decide how to do best.
California Attorney General Bill Lockyer joining us from his offices in Sacramento. Attorney General Lockyer, thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
John is calling from Acton, Massachusetts. Hi, John. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Very well. What do you see?
I'm actually a retired HP employee. I worked there for 33 years. One of the groups I think that hasn't been touched on very much are the employees of HP, both current and past.
Mm-hmm.
As you said in your opening, HP has pretty much a storied history.
pretty glorious one.
And a large part of that was based on integrity, driven by both Bill and Dave, Hewlett and Packard, and subsequent CEOs, John Young, Lou Platt. I never had, I won't say pleasure, but I never worked for Carly Fiorina, but knew the others. And internal standards of business conduct, as it was called, within HP, were held to very tightly. And I find it disappointing that the conduct that started this whole thing, that is the leaking at the boardroom, and I do understand that this is somewhat of a corporate game, really violates things that, as an employee of the company, basically would have gotten you fired without a whole lot of debate.
So, and where do you look for the reason? You know, why, after so many years of success, such a great story, and as you say, a culture of integrity, why would that slip? Internal issues, external issues, the national culture?
To be honest, I don't know enough about the details, and your callers have talked about this. I think Patty Dunn's objective was just that, was to uphold the integrity of the board and understand who was violating the confidences that were expected and to deal with them. It's unfortunate that the methods chosen, or at least the methods used, raised all the trouble that this whole conversation is about.
No kidding. For HP and maybe beyond, some self-examination going on. John, thanks for your call. Sarah is calling from Farmington, Connecticut. Hi, Sarah. You're on the air.
Hi. Good morning. Thank you. This is a very interesting and important topic, and two issues in particular caught my ear. One is the use of subcontractors, and the second relates
in this case, kind of plumbers who ended up pretexting or pirating private information at some remove.
Right, and the other related issue is how far liability goes down the line. I'm an independent research consultant, and part of my business is competitive intelligence. And I want your listeners to know that there are many, many of us who conduct competitive intelligence legally and ethically.
Does that make you a dumpster diver? I mean, can you do this and be all legal all the time?
No. Never. We never do anything illegal or unethical. And there are two important professional organizations that lead this effort. One is the Association of Independent Information Professionals, and the other is the Society for Competitive Intelligence Professionals. And we have
is pretexting acceptable to them?
No,
to you?
Never.
Period. End of story. Sarah, thanks for that point. Our time is short. Mark Rotenberg, I want to go once more to you here. There's this question of integrity, but you're looking also at law and legal protections. Can we rely on integrity, corporate or otherwise, to protect us from this kind of invasion of privacy?
Well, I wish we could, but in this instance, I'm afraid it doesn't seem to work. And I feel badly, as your earlier caller remarked. I mean, HP was a company built on integrity, and in the privacy field, over the last couple of years, it had picked up a number of awards for its commitment to privacy protection for its customers. It has played a leading role in efforts to establish stronger privacy standards. So I'm afraid that if we reach a point where a company that has done some good work in the privacy field nonetheless resorts to a practice that I think is clearly unethical, we do need some laws, and we do need some new protections to safeguard consumers.
And Jeffrey Sonnenfeld at Yale, last word goes to you. We've got about a minute here. Do you see this whole high drama sort of purging this issue from American corporate culture, or, you know, more trouble ahead?
I see it's going to be a great lightning rod for many other companies. We've had Mark Rotenberg with us at our chief executive conferences before, and Mark, we'd love to have you back because we need a lot more discussion on this topic. The caller, John, who asked about integrity in the past, he's so right that any employee, I've never heard anybody on this whole debate in this whole last 6 days mention what John did on his call, is that any employee would have been fired for this. There's a lot of discussion, fired for what this Bell board member, Jay Keyworth, did. There's got to be a lot of discussion about all the different aspects of this. You know, Thomas More, just before he got beheaded by the king in Man for All Seasons, says that that basically character is as fragile as a liquid cupped in your hands. Once you separate the fingers, it's forever gone. And it's very hard for this board, and they're working on it, to pull their hand back together again, reweave that grip.
Well, I'm grateful to both of you for being with us this hour, taking us into this very interesting story. Mark Rotenberg at the Electronic Privacy Information Center in Washington, thanks very much for being with us, Mark.
Thank you, Tom.
And Jeffrey Sonnenfeld, president of the Chief Executive Leadership Institute at Yale's School of Management. Professor Sonnenfeld, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
You can continue this conversation and download the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.